How's it going? And welcome to episode 55 of On the Wire, proud member of the Pitcher List Podcast Network. Follow the pod on the Twitter at On the Wire Pod. And if you're listening on a platform that does allow ratings and reviews, please take a second and let us know what you think. I am Kevin Hastings. You can follow me on Twitter at HastingKevin. Adam is once again off this week on vacation with his family. Hope he's having a wonderful time. And he can and should be followed at 80 grade. That's all spelled out, 80 grade. In his absence, I am joined by my good friend, Lucas Beery, fantasy baseball and DFS contributor for DrRoto.com and FantasySportsDegens.com, co-host with Lou Landers on the Lucas Baseball Podcast. He can be followed on the Twitter at LucasBeery33. That's the number, 33. And Lucas, welcome. Great to see you again. I haven't really talked to you much in person other than some Twitter DMs back and forth since we saw each other in Arizona in October. But it's great to hang out and talk some baseball, man.
Absolutely. I'm really grateful that you had me have me on this week and in Adam's absence. I hope he's having a great vacation as well. I got a chance to listen to my podcast co-host Lou Landers last week. I think he gave some good insights. I appreciated what he had to say, and hopefully we can repeat and have another good episode.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I told Lou last week, the same this week, it's selfish of me to ask the two of you to come fill in as co-host when Adam's on vacation, because we've talked so much baseball in the past and it's just nice and easy. We're going to have a good time and talk some baseball, but then also it gives me an excuse to have you back when Adam is here. So we might get a double dip with you this season.
Oh, that would be awesome. That would be fantastic.
Very cool. Let's jump right into it. These in season, we're just getting back into the swing of things, this being our second full season of the On the Wire podcast. And in season, we like to start the episodes with some news and notes. We don't go over everything, and we try to keep it to things that may affect our fab bids on Sunday evening. So a couple of things that did come up this week, and I'm sure there's more, and maybe some of these aren't as relevant as I like to think at first glance. But one of the things that stuck out to me early in the week was Hunter Harvey called up by the Washington Nationals. He pitched a clean eighth inning with a strikeout in his first appearance. Now, the Nationals had an 11-1 lead at the time, so it was not a high leverage eighth inning situation. And his only other appearance this week so far was to get the final out of the fifth inning in a game on Thursday. He's still pumping high 90s. He's not throwing high leverage situations yet, but this is somebody I had a lot of interest in when he was in Baltimore. And I think many of us thought he was going to be the next closer for the Baltimore Orioles. So any interest in a crowded but underwhelming so far Washington bullpen?
Yeah, this was a really interesting note. It slipped under my radar until we started sharing notes before the pod. At first, I was mildly intrigued with Harvey, since as a dynasty player, that's pretty much one of my biggest formats, dynasty baseball, deeper leagues, really. Obviously, Hunter Harvey's been a big name for a while, and he's had that huge 60 grade fastball per Fangraphs, but Tanner Rainey's been even bigger, and he's cinched that job. He's been able to rack up strikeouts. It's early in the season. That's why I have a tough time citing stats a lot of the times, but Rainey has a 25% swinging strike rate. That's been in his bag, the swing and miss that he has. So until I see him falter and until I see more production out of Harvey, I would have a tough time putting a dollar on him in Fab, just because I think Rainey could just take this job and run.
Yeah, absolutely. Rainey has looked good. Kyle Finnegan is still there. People had him penciled in for possibly some saves this season. And as I said, pretty crowded bullpen. Sean Doolittle still there. So there's a lot going on. We'll have to see, as you said, not only a lot from Harvey, but Rainey is probably going to have to falter as well. But definitely something I'm keeping an eye on. As you said, it had fallen, I think, under many people's radars that this move was made earlier in the week.
It's one of those things where in a dynasty league, if you're under 100 major league innings, you can be potentially stashed away in a farm system. So if he starts to look good, that's an even cheaper way to tuck him away. So you could keep an eye on that because he would only cost up a minor league spot since he has very little MLB experience, despite the fact that he's in his age 27 season.
Very good point. And I spoke of crowded bullpen in Washington as I'm about to bring up Tampa. They had a revolving door this week. Patino went to the 60-day IL. Dustin Knight and Ralph Garza Jr. were both called up and sent back down. Tommy Romero came up. We were pretty excited. He gave up 3 earned runs in 1 2/3 inning pitched. Ryan Thompson and Phoenix Sanders, both currently listed as middle relievers. And Ryan Yarbrough should be able to return this week. So is it even worth trying to figure this out and see if we're interested in any of these Tampa pitchers, whether they be starters or relievers?
There are actually a few guys that I would be interested in if I really needed to have a ratio protector in a 15-team league. JP Fireisen is certainly one that I'm going to keep my eyes on. He has good strikeout stuff, and he has been trusted in high leverage, and he's even received some saves in the past, which is certainly a good thing. 3 saves last year, not a lot. He's a ratio protector with an off chance of getting a save. And Brooks Raley as well. He is another solid pitcher that the Tampa Bay Rays sought out, paid him a solid contract this offseason, and he's also seen some save opportunities as well. Tampa actually paid him $10 million over 2 years, which to them is obviously a ton of money.
A lot of money for them.
So,
yeah.
But yeah, if you're looking to avoid streaming out a rough starter, I think you can pick one of those guys up for $1 to $5 or $6 in a 15-teamer. And just throw them out there and try to protect your ratios and pray for a save, even though it may not happen.
We know the narrative that so many guys in Tampa will get save opportunities throughout the year. And while that has been true, at the same time, they typically do have one guy that does get a majority of their save chances.
Yeah.
So far, that's Andrew Kittredge. But the guys you mentioned are probably the next two in line, not only for the sporadic saves that we expect from Tampa, but if Kittredge would falter.
Absolutely. I have certainly, we've seen in years past wherever it was Emilio Pagan or Diego Castillo, they have not been necessarily afraid to lock in that one guy. But I do think obviously they understand the matchups about as good, if not better than anyone. And Fireisen and Raley could potentially factor in. Like I said, keep your expectations to just ratio help and maybe a few Ks, but they could fall into a save since this is a very winning club that could even win the World Series, in my opinion.
Absolutely. In Minnesota, everybody's talking about the Byron Buxton injury. The latest report is could be back in a couple of weeks, is what I read. But even prior to that injury, Trevor Larnach was recalled when Alex Kirov hit the IL with a wrist injury. This is a really concerning injury to me because the imaging is clean on Kirilov's wrist, but he missed a significant period of time last season with this same wrist. And now they're saying the imaging is clean. And Rocco Baldelli is talking that Kirilov is going to have to learn to manage the pain and play through the issue. This doesn't sound like something that is conducive to a highly productive player in Kirilov if and when he does return. So is Larnach going to be a long-term option here in Minnesota?
First, I wanted to start off with Kirilov, and ironically, in our offseason previews over with Lucas Baseball, we did every position preview. And even though I liked Kirilov's talent, we did cite his wrist issues in the past as a hesitation point. Now, we brought that up with Cabrian Hayes too. So knock on wood, hopefully he's okay there. But whenever it's something that's a chronic issue that happens to repeat itself, it is absolutely petrifying to your point, Kevin. As a guy that has him in a dynasty league, I'm very worried. but you can do nothing other than hold him until he starts producing and then maybe move off of him once people forget that he's injured. But with Larnach, I have a tough time personally seeing him become entrenched as a helpful fantasy option. I had a lot of hopes for him last year whenever he came up and did really well, but he tailed off after I think the league made some adjustments to him in AAA last year. Over a 30% strikeout rate. It's just petrifying, and I think that he has a lot of things he needs to work on in order to become a useful major leaguer and a fantasy option. Although I like the talent, he's a young guy still, so he probably just needs to close up some holes in his swing and make some adjustments.
Yeah, the strikeout rate is definitely what has been concerning, even at the triple A level in 2021, almost 34%. So far, so good. We're only talking six plate appearances, but only one strikeout in those six plate appearances thus far. So I think it's baby steps, right? We watch the rolling averages and just get below 30. Once we get below 30, we can get optimistic and then start looking. Then we start hoping for mid 20s. But yeah, you're absolutely 100% correct. It's the strikeout rate that we're worried about here.
The benefit is that if you do want to see him do well, if you have him in a dynasty league, not that was our theme, but it's just come up a few times. Two things, he's going to be working with elite pro coaching, which in the minor leagues, they don't always have that. Even though you think they have the best of the best, they don't always. So working with the pro coaches up in Minnesota could potentially help him, although his competition will be much more fierce. And it could be lazy analysis to some, but I do look at it. He was a 55 future value prospect on Fangraphs. There are not a lot of those guys out there. Very few 60s and 70s, but there aren't many 55s either. So that's another reason to continue to keep him etched in your kitchen table like you have here today.
Yeah, absolutely. At least worth keeping an eye on.
Yep.
One of the big pieces of news just over the last couple of days, and I think we all saw the highlight, and it was pretty obvious when we saw Teoscar Hernandez make that swing that it was going to be an oblique issue. In my article for this week, which comes out on pitcherlist.com every Sunday afternoon, I was already on Raimel Tapia for this week just due to the schedule that the Blue Jays have. They're facing right-handers all week long. So I really liked Tapia for the week. Now, adding the loss of Teoscar Hernandez on top of the scheduling that the Blue Jays have, he's actually moved up to fifth and sixth in the lineup the last two games since Hernandez's injury. So you have interest in Tapia as well. He's very heavily rostered in the 15-team main event leagues at 72%, but he's available in over half of online championships. That's the 12-team leagues with the 23-man starting rosters. And only 17% on Yahoo, the shallower leagues. In some of those shallow leagues, do you think Tapia may be relevant this week?
He's a bit more relevant than I expected. So that is interesting, because he just had such little power. I just wasn't intrigued. And I also know that as a hitter, career 77 WRC plus, and that was in Coors. So I just full faded him just because I didn't think he was a good player. But with that schedule, awesome lineup. The injury as well to Danny Jansen has allowed Kirk to be more cemented and has allowed Tapia to get more playing time. So all these factors are coming into thinking that he could be a really nice stream. So I'm super glad you pointed him out.
Yeah, I think the schedule had me interested anyway. Yes. And now the injuries and trades that Toronto has made have him up in the middle third of the lineup. So even better. Just a couple of other players that I just wanted to briefly touch on. We have Josh Naylor coming back from injury, I think a little sooner than some expected in Cleveland. Mackenzie Gore had his first outing in San Diego, and Daz Cameron has been called up by Detroit. Now, obviously, Gore is probably the biggest name here and will get the most attention this week, but either of these guys or anybody else just off the top of your head due to some of these moves that you're looking at for Sunday evening?
Naylor is a possibility, but with Mackenzie Gore, Obviously, he's the biggest name here. He's going to be 12 team viable, obviously, for some people, since he is such a big name. He's going to be picked up, I think, in almost all 12 teamers just because he is such a big name. But I need to see a little bit more for him. And unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to be in on him just because I think that there's just too many things that he needs to correct. He needs to not only demonstrate swing and miss, but he's going to have to live up to a healthy fab bid this weekend. So I'm not particularly interested in him. Even though he could work out, it's just not something I'm going to be aggressive on. And then with Naylor, I'm not desperate enough to need him per se, but I guess there could be a scenario where someone could be, where if you're in a 20-team redraft league, he's an option there. And then I guess last but not least, to finish up with Daz Cameron, I actually liked him a year ago and last year, and this is the first year I've gotten away from him just because he was so cheap previously, and there was a little bit of prospect shine with a little bit of power and speed, and he's even showed compiling capabilities in AAA Toledo, but the roster has gotten so much better in Detroit. I don't really think that he's going to be able to force their hand unless something drastically changes with how he performs.
Yeah, I wish Mackenzie Gore was not named Mackenzie Gore, because it you hit the nail on the head. I'm bidding on him this week, but I'm not going to end up rostering him anywhere on Monday morning. I say that a lot throughout the season. Adam kind of laughs when I say it. Yeah, I'm going to have my bids on him in every league, but I'm not going to end up with him. But that matchup at home against the Cincinnati Reds, who are hitting 191 as a team, slugging 313 as a team, this is a dream matchup for a guy that we would like to see improve on his first start, getting this matchup in his second start out of the gate. And he did go 5 1/3 innings. It's somebody I would definitely be on, and am just the name recognition is going to have him priced higher than I'm willing to go.
Listen, I know that he's probably made some mechanical changes to get his groove back. I mean, he had a lost season last year, and in 2020, he didn't even get the call up to a team that was desperate for pitching. So obviously, he has gone through the woods and come back. And I hope that he has a nice career for himself, but I cannot give a pass to his 2021 season, which was really poor for a player that was the number one pitching prospect in all of baseball. And all of a sudden now he's just fixed. I need a lot more evidence than to do that, because I think he's going to cost well over $100 in fab, if not much more.
Yeah, absolutely. And in leagues where trades are an option, we know these guys are never more valuable than when they first get called up.
Yep.
And if he does have a nice start against Cincinnati due to that great matchup, he's somebody I would be seeing who I could get for him if he has a nice start on Wednesday, like I expect.
Absolutely agree.
Excellent. So that's going to do it for news and notes. I'm sure there's all kinds of things going on, but it's early in the season. We have so much to look at when we're planning for our fab bids each week at this time of the season. We just did go over a few injuries, call-ups, different movement going on with the teams that will affect those decisions. But hopefully, for most of our teams, there's not a whole lot of moves that we have to make yet. Our hands not being forced. Yes, we lost Byron Buxton. We lost Teoscar Hernandez. And those are things that we have to deal with some of our teams. But it's still early. There's not a whole lot of that piling up yet. So just in general, what is your typical fab strategy early in the season? It sounds like you've hinted at a couple of times. We're similar. We don't like spending a lot of money yet.
No, I typically, with each and every one of my teams, just a note, I have about 10, 11 fab teams, I have about 6 on Fantrax, and I have 5 on NFBC. Thankfully, those are the only two platforms I'm playing this year. I cut Yahoo out just for, you know, simplicity and take stress out of it. Yeah, sanity. That's a good way to put it. So I have those 11, which I know seems like a lot, but you got to think a couple of them are 20 teamers. So there's rarely a myriad of options. There's probably 7 or 8 players that are really interesting each week, if that. But I'm pretty much just taking the course with my team, and I'm not making drastic measures. If I was desperate for saves like I was in TGFBI, where I only ended up with Liam Hendricks and Paul Sewald, yeah, You better believe I dropped over $100 on Daniel Bard last week, and I hope it works out. But that's about as aggressive as I'll get. Maybe that 100 to 150 range. I don't really like going over that. And in fact, even that's pretty high. But if it's a closer that seems to have the job, I would go for it then. Or if it's a Josh Lowe that has potentially premium power speed, I would. But I'm pretty picky with who I'm going aggressive on.
Yeah, my highest bid last week was in an NFBC league. I bid $92 on Josh Lowe. That's an extremely high bid for me this time of year, and it wasn't even close.
No, it wasn't, based on the results.
But yeah, I tend to agree. I like saying that I am conservatively aggressive, which makes no sense, not even as an oxymoron. But what I mean by that is I am very conservative with my bid amounts, but I try to be aggressive as far as looking ahead.
That makes a ton of sense. That's pretty much the way that I saw Daniel Bard get picked up for $18 in week one by Michael Govier in our Glarf League. So that was a genius move. And that's similar to what you're talking about there, being ahead of the curve.
Yeah, take the chances, especially right now when hopefully NFBC style formats, we have those 7 bench spots and no IL. And I know there's some other leagues out there even more restrictive than that. Early in the year, hopefully, we're not really hamstrung by that yet.
Yes. And that's just to finish up. One other kind of thing that I really looked at with my teams is obviously not being aggressive, but just trying to get those locked in plate appearances before the season even started. You wouldn't believe how many Yandy Diaz shares that I picked up. I know it's a boring name, but he's hitting in a prime lineup spot for Tampa. And those kind of guys, whenever you have a little COVID injury pop up, like we saw with Mark Canha and Brandon Nimmo, getting those guys on your bench that are locked in every day at bats, I think that's pretty much invaluable since injuries and even potentially COVID could pop back up. So littering my bench with some of those guys that I think are locked in playing time is pretty much one of my other staples for almost all my NFBC teams with no IL and the ability to make Friday lineup change.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't agree more. And a guy like Diaz, the narrative is in Tampa, everybody is platooning. So it's surprising to some to look and say he had 541 plate appearances last season and he's already got 26 in less than a week and a half this season. He is playing every day. So guys like that are great, especially when it's against a narrative that's common belief out there. Keeps the prices down on these guys.
Absolutely. I got him for, I think, $20 uncontested, which I don't care. Sure, yeah. You could have said I wasted $19, but I needed him on my team because my third base was a little bit weak and dual eligibility. Can't beat that.
Absolutely. Where this time of year, throughout late draft season and into the early season, where do you like to look for a lot of your information? Are you just looking at box scores on your own? Obviously, Dr. Road, a guy has got a lot of great stuff going on over there. Where are you trying to keep tabs on finding these plate appearances and finding guys like Diaz?
Yeah, a good question. With plate appearances in specific, I think this is one of the benefits of DFS. I'm pretty much locked in as far as where guys are hitting in the lineup, who's playing when, how the platoon trends are going. So that kind of, as far as the playing time, is pretty big. And just really playing in draft champions and draft and hold leagues, trying to know every single depth chart as best to your ability, especially if you're a 15 teamer. Now, if you're a 12 teamer and you're a casual player, maybe not worth your time. I understand that we only have so many hours in the day, but just by trying to know the depth charts to the best of my ability and keep researching them, how an injury is going to change something, I think that's pretty important. So obviously roster resource for that. And again, with box score stuff too, because even though as much as I like certain guys on Tampa or even in Minnesota, they will be occasionally pinch hit for, which stinks. But knowing that is good because just every team has their own kind of way of doing things.
Yeah, that's a great point with the DFS. It's something I think gets overlooked. We talk about it a time or two throughout the season, then we forget about it again. When you're looking at who's in the lineup day in and day out, just because you want to know who's available for that day. Mm-hmm. You start remembering these things over time and these trends and say, oh, for the week, this is going to work out. Or looking at schedules to know the pitching they're going to face for the first half or second half of the week or the entire week in full weekly change leagues. It's just, it becomes habit. You don't even realize you're doing it or realize that you've already done some of this research.
Absolutely. And you can certainly unearth some gems and find guys like Cooper Hummel that are coming up out of nowhere just because he's leading off and he's minimum price. So of course you plug him in there and just see what happens. And I know another thing that you do as well is that you're a big multi-leaguer, one of the bigger ones that I know, and just keeping a religious view on those lineups, just making sure you're not missing any plate appearances or making sure you're getting four games instead of three as much as possible. So just keeping a hawk eye on that. I think even though there is a lot of info coming at us these days, I think just keeping that really locked in eye on your lineups too, just in addition to the box scores, helps you track the playing time.
And you hinted at it a little bit there. It's not just keeping an eye on Major League Baseball lineups and changes and where guys are in the lineup and how matchups are working out and how they're being used, but on our own teams, it can be really easy that just because we know a guy is healthy and we have a narrative in our head of how he is going to produce, to forget to keep an eye on him. The example I have in my head, specific example, is Carlos Santana last season. It was just set it and a forget it in a couple of my leagues, especially OBP leagues, where I just, oh, he's great, I don't have to pay attention. And then look a few weeks later and realize how horrible he had been. It's not just the MLB lineups. We need to keep an eye on our own lineups as well.
I couldn't agree more. Kevin, I don't know if you read this or not, but I wrote a kind of a lessons learned article in October, yeah, November last year. And I mentioned Carlos Santana by name as the guy that I characterize it as a set it and forget it heuristic. We have so many issues, so many kind of things going on in our lives. You need to be able to just compartmentalize and say, all right, I'm going to set it and forget it with him. But I you can't do that. It's not good practice. I got the Razzball hitter and pitcher streamer planner this year, and I've been utilizing it really closely. And I know that some guys that have been using it for many years might laugh at me, and that's okay. But man, the difference between two games for even a star player and four games of a Michael Taylor is actually close on that. Ketel Marte this week had two games versus the Houston Astros, and he was really far down the list compared to just mediocre-ish kind of role players that have everyday burn. It was interesting seeing even just that. So the set it and forget it heuristic, every week you need to analyze each matchup and just see what would be best to maximize the plate appearances and pitching matchups.
Yeah, and a week like last week, that's especially important, I think, because there were only those two teams, Houston and Arizona, that had five-game weeks, and there were 14 teams that had seven-game weeks. So it was a big deal. This week, I don't as a big deal.
Yeah.
There's 12 teams with a 7-day week, but nobody only has five. Everybody else has six. So yeah, absolutely. I could not agree more. That's definitely things we need to keep an eye on. And it's really hard to sit a really good player, an above average player. I don't think anybody probably benched Kyle Tucker last week because he only had two games the first half of the week. But if I had another option, I was playing somebody instead of Yuli Gurriel, for example. If somebody has potential for double the at-bats, that's a huge deal.
Absolutely.
All right. Now let's jump into some individual specific players by category. But first, let's take this real short break.
Hey, Alex Fast here, and thanks for listening to this podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. If you're a fan, consider supporting all of us by getting a PL Plus subscription, where you're going to get an ad-free website and get access to our Discord, where you can talk to all of our podcast hosts and staff. Plus, you can hang out with our incredible Pitcher List community. It's basically a baseball sanctuary year-round for as low as $8 a month. You can sign up at pitcherlist.com/plus, and you're going to get your first month free with promo code PODCAST. podcast. Also, don't forget to check out everything else we do as well, from YouTube videos, live streams, newsletters, off-season articles, TikToks, breakdowns, over 15 baseball podcasts on our network. We can't stop talking about baseball, even during the off-season. So sign up for PL Plus today at pitcherlist.com/plus and use promo code podcast to get your first month free. All right, thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
All right, welcome back. I am here joined by Lucas Beery, Dr. Roto, and Fantasy Sports Degens. And Lucas, we've been talking about some trends, some news and notes, and we got a few little things going on, but let's just go by category and see if there's anybody we're interested in this week. And everybody's favorite category, let's just start off with the power. Anybody you're looking to for home runs and RBI this week, especially if you lost a Buxton or a Teoscar Hernandez, anybody we're after?
Yes, a player that I think is absolutely must own in all 15 team leagues and is available in a slew of 15 team leagues is Chad Pender of the Oakland Athletics. I want to go ahead and give a shout out to one of my good friends, Graham, at Shrimp Boat Captain. He actually does pods on the Draft Champions podcast. Yeah. He was all over Chad Pender. Has him in, I think, about 40% of his leagues and was getting him for next to nothing. And we come around here. The Oakland A's had stripped down their team and hitting every single day at the top of the lineup inside the top four most days is Chad Pender. Now, he's not a traditional power bat per se. He's a wiry build, but in terms of the opportunity and the plate appearances, the lineup spot, and a little bit of thump in his bat, I think that he's a nice streamer for potentially home runs and RBIs.
Yeah, I love that call. And the only two games thus far that he has not started, he has gotten into the game as a pinch hitter as well. So we know they're looking to his bat in the right matchup later in the game when they might not necessarily his matchup versus the starting pitcher. And with projections at way under 500 plate appearances, having him for close to 20 home runs, if he's going to get this kind of playing time, all of a sudden we're looking at possibly a mid-20s home run hitter.
That is a tasty thing to be able to add off the waiver wire for not a huge price per se. I think that you can potentially get him for under $50, even though I think he is going to draw some popularity this week. One of the things
with the people that lost Buxton or the Oscar. Yeah.
Oh yeah. It's starting to thin out there, not too badly, but slightly on the waivers. The one of the things that would have been nice is that he used to be a Swiss Army knife for the Oakland A's back in the day, probably last year and 2 years ago, but he's probably going to be outfield only, I think, in order to preserve his health. He's had some lower half knee issues that caused him to miss some time. So I think they probably just want to set him, forget him in left field just to keep his bat in the lineup, but he could possibly gain multi-position eligibility, or at least that's something he did in the past.
Yep. Definitely agree. Yeah, another guy that you have here is someone that I was looking at, another Tampa Bay Ray that is not necessarily, excuse me, there's got to be a better way for me to say this.
Sneaky.
He's getting more plate appearances than the narrative may suggest we would get from Choi in Tampa.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is a sneaky pickup like Yandy Diaz, except on the opposite corner. Now, he is a pretty strict platoon on lefties for the most part, but I think occasionally that can be a little overblown on role players, because it's not like you can't bench him if there are, you know, two lefties in a four-game setup per week. Obviously, it'd be nice if he was 100% full-time, but the selling point with Choi is that for his career, he's a well above average bat. He's a 121 WRC plus who controls the strike zone, walks at a double-digit clip, and he really lengthens up the lineup for Tampa. So the pinch hit risk is real with him. I know that too well from DFS, but as far as a smattering of RBIs and the occasional home run, I like Choi as a really cheap corner infield buy, because corner infield is obviously all too well, Kevin, is ugly in these 15 teamers. It's pretty much the ugliest position outside of catcher for some reason.
Yeah, it sure can be. And much like Pender, projections have him for less than 500 plate appearances, a little over 100 games, and close to 20 home runs. So he's another guy that if he is going to get a few more plate appearances than we expect, then we're looking at a 20 home run hitter.
And a lot of people see them as just really a pitching and defense team, but Tampa Bay was one of the better offenses in the major leagues last year, and they're only going to get better with Wander Franco and some of their other younger players. Brandon Lau, one of the best hitters in the American League, getting a little bit more experience as we move on. So that lineup is really solid too.
Yeah, absolutely. I like in shallow leagues, I was looking throughout the offseason and saw quite a bit of talk about maybe we don't talk enough about shallow leagues on some of these podcasts. One guy I want to point out is Alejandro Kirk in Toronto, universally owned in 15-team mixed leagues, universally owned in 12-team online championship leagues, but only 38% rostered on Yahoo. Now, I know these are mostly single catcher leagues, but Teoscar Hernandez out with an injury, Danny Jansen out with an injury, they traded Reese McGuire. All of a sudden, Alejandro Kirk may be looking at the type of plate appearances that we're expecting from Will Smith, Darlton Varsho, Wilson Contreras. And if so, he is a starting catcher in a 10 or 12 team one catcher league.
I absolutely agree. Man, I didn't get any shares of Kirk, even though I love the talent. I just thought the situation was a little too crowded. But man, am I regretting that now, since I should have remembered injuries happen every single year to sometimes help guys playing time.
Yeah, that crowded situation thinned out pretty quickly, and he will get some designated hitter appearances as well. You have one more power guy here. This is a guy this is the first year I finally got off of him. And so I would like to take the credit for what we have seen so far.
Yes, it's been a very bumpy career so far for Oscar Mercado, going from featured member of Fabapalooza of 2019, where he was a gem with 15-15 season with solid counting stats and a .269 batting average, to just absolutely just unstartable, even for a major league club. But this year, he's showing a little bit more ability to make impact with the ball, harder hit rate. He's shown 3 barrels so far. It's really hard to look at rates at this point, but the fact that he is getting to those barrels is good. And he's a speculative add, so it's not like you're going to have to be married to him if he does flop like he did in 2020 and 2021. The plate appearances seem to be fairly locked in for Oscar Mercado, and those 15-teamers outfield can be tricky, so I like him as a speculative pickup.
Yeah, absolutely. Coming into 2020, he was coming off of a wrist injury, which is, we look at Oscar Mercado and we talked about Alex Kirilloff earlier, and these types of things linger differently for different players. It very simply could have been for the past, 220 games between 2020 and 2021. It could have been that his wrist wasn't completely healed, and now we're seeing what we expected after 2019.
Yeah, that is a very good point. That's obviously one of the biggest things projections don't account for very good, because it's impossible, is injuries. So that's a really good note there to have. Again, if you liked him and Kevin's nugget kind of resonated with you there, throw an extra couple of bucks on his bid. I don't think that, and listen, I'm not sure what you think his bidding numbers will get to this weekend, but I think they'll be fairly reasonable, under $40.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's players that people will be more focused on with their bids in spite. And it's been a couple of years now. Once the hype goes away, it takes a little bit to get it back. I don't know if 2 home runs is going to bring everybody flocking back, but it's definitely raising my eyebrows as somebody I've been a fan of for 3 seasons now, since we fell in love with Mercado in 2019.
Absolutely. I think that the bids will be fairly reasonable, and you can pay for some decent playing time and hope for more.
Awesome. How about for speed, whether it be stolen bases specifically or just somebody that's going to get out there and run the bases well and score some runs for us? Anybody we can look to for those categories this week?
Yeah, my guy for this one, and interestingly enough, earlier on the Lucas Baseball podcast, Lou corrected me a little bit, which was always good. I like that. We can certainly disagree a little bit, but I had Santiago Espinal listed under this category, but Luke pointed out that his stolen base success rates have been a little bit low. not quite what you want to see for a speed guy, but I do think that he has the ability to chip in 5 to 6 potentially over the year. So I guess it's not a great speed streamer, but I do think that he's going to be picked up in almost all 15 team leagues now that he's taken over Kevon Biggio as the second baseman for the best offense in the American League. So Santiago Espinal, maybe you pray for a pinching of steals since he is a pretty athletic guy and a good runner, but that's one of my potential targets there for middle infield help.
Yeah, very nice. Definitely as I think we kind of expected Kevon Biggio to get one more shot, but it might be his last shot. I think we're going to see Espinal in there for the foreseeable future. I like that call a lot. Mine is a schedule play, my speed player for the week. Elvis Andrus for the Oakland Athletics hits second versus left-handed starting pitching. And Oakland has a full slate of 7 games this week, 4 of them scheduled to be against left-handed starters. So we're going to have 4 games this week where Elvis Andrus is probably in the 2-hole and then in the 6-hole up to 3 games when they will face a right-handed starter. I would guess if they're going to rest Andrus a day, it would be one of those games against a righty. So we should get those 4 starts in the 2-hole against lefties and a couple of more against righties and a stolen base or 2 for the week and hopefully a handful of runs.
Another solid draft champions play there, Elvis Andrus. I know some people may roll their eyes, but while some folks were taking prospects that may never debut, you could have gotten an Elvis Andrus or a Nick Ahmed. If you can see that your steals might be a little bit iffy in a DC, you might be able to plug him in there into middle infield if you don't have a better option. So I think that's a great call out.
Yeah, and he is almost universally available. 0% rostered in online championships, only 2% rostered in main event, and 3% on Yahoo for a guy that's going to get a lot of plate appearances this week.
Yep, he'll keep your batting average in line as well with maybe a 250 average, and that's not going to help, but not going to hurt you either.
Right, yeah. And so both of the guys we mentioned here for speed, we could have used in our Knicks category as well. It's opportunity. A couple of scheduling notes. I mentioned it earlier. 12 teams are scheduled to play 7 games this week, but everybody else plays 6. So there's not the big disparity between a couple of teams only having a 5-game week and several having a 7-game week like we had last week, where that made for some decisions with our Arizona and Houston bats. Toronto should face righty starters in all 6 of their games as it looks right now. The Angels are going to see 3 lefties Friday through Sunday. So that's something to take a look at for the weekend in NFBC formats where we get to change our hitters out on Friday before the games begin. And 4 of 6 lefty starters on the week as well. Oakland is in the same boat. They get 2 the first half and 2 the second half. We did talk about that with Elvis Andrus, the 4 lefties for them for the week. San Francisco and Arizona both face right-handed starting pitchers in 6 of their 7 games, it appears. And it looks to me like the Padres are going to get 5 left-handed pitching starters this week. So as we take some of that into consideration, Lucas, who do you like for the opportunity that they may have coming up over the next week or two?
Yeah, you mentioned that a lot of the times in the fantasy baseball realm, we focus almost too much on 15 team or 12 team. And that's because that's what we play, obviously. Right. But more of a shallow name that I wanted to throw out here. And again, he's owned in almost all 15 team main events. He's only 11% available in those leagues, but he's widely available in 12 teamers. Garrett Cooper of the Miami Marlins hitting right in the 2-hole. He's really close to getting first base eligibility. And when he does that, I will cheer. So that's something to be noted. Full-time at bats, nice batting average, good little bit of power. I wouldn't say that he's going to pace for over 25 homers, but I think 20 homers and a 270 to 280 average could potentially be in the cards for Cooper.
Yeah, I love Garrett Cooper. We talked about him a lot through the offseason. It's all about health. As long as he's healthy, he's hitting it near the top of that lineup, which if people have not taken a look at the Marlins offensive lineup recently, It's actually pretty impressive, the first five or six guys they have in that lineup.
Absolutely. I heard you and two other podcasts combined with Dugout Study Hall and In the Deep, and you guys just kept going on and on about Garrett Cooper, and I was just fist pumping, walking the dog. I was just like, all right, let's have this happen. I need the guy to have health, have the internal brace Tommy John procedure. Let's get him cleaned up like Rhys Hoskins had, and let's just hope that he can hit.
Yeah, definitely. As I mentioned earlier, when we were talking about the news and notes, I already had Raimel Tapia in this outline and in my article for Sunday afternoon, even prior to the Teoscar Hernandez injury. That just gives him more of an opportunity.
Yeah.
Maybe not in number of plate appearances, but it's moved him up in the lineup. So he is the guy I had listed here. As I mentioned, he's available in over half of 12-team online championship leagues and over a quarter of the 15-team main events. So even in deeper leagues, take a look, see if he might be available, especially with all of the right-handed starting pitching they're going to see this week. You have another guy here that you like the opportunity for.
Yeah, another kind of Swiss Army knife player, Ramon Urias. He is firmly implanted into full-time at-bats for the Baltimore Orioles. And soon enough, he'll be gaining third base eligibility over on NFBC, giving him triple eligibility all in the infield. He's got everything except for first base, which makes him super nice. And he's very widely available. Now, I'm not necessarily in love, per se, with the bat. I don't think that he's going to be some sort of stud player. But I think that he's going to be competent enough to use when he has four games. And obviously hitting in the American League East with that triple eligibility, he's going to have spots where he can do some damage either at Fenway or in Yankee Stadium. That kind of.
Yeah, and it looks like he's facing some BABIP bad luck so far this season. Already 30 plate appearances, which is among the league leaders. So as you said, firmly entrenched in that lineup. He's hit fifth or higher every game but one, and he's striking out at an acceptable 23% and does take a handful of walks. So it does appear it's just a matter of time. And he was a guy that was a trendy pickup in spots the second half of last season. So I think we expect him to be better than what we've seen so far. And with those plate appearances, you're exactly right. And help really help in the run and RBI categories both.
Yeah, obviously he's going to get third base eligibility, but adding corner to a guy who's already dual eligible up the middle, even if you don't use him, having him on your bench is a super nice luxury because more and more injuries will continue to pile up. So he's an insurance policy where if you need him as everyday at bats, maybe down the road you'll be able to use him if you can help use him to help bolster your bench depth on those NFBC formats.
Absolutely. That's one thing I've tried to pay more attention to this season. Last season, I didn't pay enough attention to what am I going to do this weekend if something bad happens in terms of an injury to my squad during the first half of the week. Do I have options for the weekend?
That is the ultimate benefit of the multi-position eligibility for sure. Absolutely.
Definitely. This next category is funny because off air, neither one of us have real strong feelings in favor of who we're looking at here for wins and K's, whether it be a guy with a two-start week or somebody we think might vulture a win as a follower or have a really good solid single matchup for the week. But we do have a couple of guys here, but I think we're in agreement on we're going to approach this cautiously.
Yes. One guy that I was looking at picking up is Daniel Lynch of the Kansas City Royals. Bumpy ride to the start of his career, like, unfortunately, Kevin, many of your young Royals arms, but he's shown a good strikeout rate so far, even though it's a small sample. He was a former very high-end prospect, borderline top 50, and on Keith Law's list, he was inside the top 20, if I remember correctly. So this is a guy with pedigree. Gets two start this week. I would recommend picking him up in 15-teamers just for that jolt of upside, but I would keep him on my bench because there's just too much risk in starting him versus Seattle and Minnesota. But as far as just a shot of upside, that's not going to cost you a ton. I think Lynch is worth a look, even though it's potentially risky and may not even work out, but it should be relatively cheap.
Yeah, he looked better than the results he got in his first start, and that will obviously happen when you give up three home runs, but his stuff looked pretty good for the most part as I was watching that game. Dallas Keuchel has a couple of matchups I like for the week. We've talked about the injury issues in Minnesota, and he also gets to face the Cleveland Guardians this week. Now, Cleveland, a couple of days ago, I tweeted out about how good their offense had been for the first week of the season, but it's already starting to come back to earth over the last couple of days, and I think we'll start to see that lineup more in terms of what we expected of not being something that we really fear. And Dallas Keuchel, go out there and give me my five innings. And with that offense, especially in these couple of matchups, I'd like to think we're getting at least one win this week. We always say we can't chase wins. I've always said we can't chase wins, but we have to.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I've heard you say that before. And listen, if you're down a Luis Castillo and you lost a Jack Flaherty and you're looking at a tough setup, rolling Keuchel out there for the chance of a win, if not maybe two, if he runs pure, you could do worse things in a draft and hold setup. A lot of people wanted him to just go away off the face of the planet because he had a rough past 2 years, really. But he's getting paid around $20 million a year. The White Sox have been hammered with injuries. You can never have enough starting pitching depth. And he's a guy that's shown a high level in the past. So I think that he's going to continue to get the ball and playing on one of the best teams in the American League with two potentially navigable matchups. You could do worse if you're in a very tough spot, I'll put it that way.
Yeah, Lou and I talked last week about it's a little early to really be focusing on streaming pitching if we don't have to, if we have some depth to our starting pitching. I think this is a move with these two matchups for Keuchel. This is something I'm probably going to try to do in most of my leagues where he's available. I like these two matchups, and a win or two from a streamer right now counts as much as it does in August.
This is not a just roll them out there and just pray. This is one of the more veteran arms that they're not going to protect his future anymore on one of the best teams in baseball. And he's already been able to go five innings showing that he can do that, which has been a huge issue for most pitchers. They don't have the pitch count to get up to there. So I think that this is, even though some may be a little worried to use him, and I certainly would be a little concerned, but I think that this is doable if you want to try to chase a win, even though the ratios could be bumpy, as I'm sure you would admit to, but yeah.
What if the ratios are our bigger concern? What if we're looking for a guy that might help stabilize us? Maybe we don't have a real deep starting pitching staff and we're looking for somebody to help protect our ratios for the week. Could be a long reliever, could be a follower. Is there anybody out there that you think, maybe not the big strikeout guy, but might help our ratios this week?
Yeah, a couple of guys that I have my eye on, and he's taken up in a lot of 15 teamers, but he's also available in some too, is Spencer Strider. That's a nice ratio chipper from the Braves. He has actually come in relief, but the strikeout and the swing and miss stuff that he's demonstrated certainly warrants attention. Now in a 12 team league where your options are a bit more rich, yeah, I'm not as intrigued by Strider, but in a 15 teamer, where he's going to have the ability to go a little bit more innings than a Colin McHugh, who's our kind of trademarked rich, who's this podcast's trademarked ratio chipper. I like the fact that Strider goes more innings. And also, it would not be surprising at all to see him just get a rotation job, potentially. And then all of a sudden, you could have a breakout on your hands that's a starter, but he's a ratio chipper now.
Yeah, I like it a lot. I have another player here that is very highly rostered in both 15 and 12 team leagues. I think that may change because of the current role that he is in, which is the role I'm seeking here. Mm-hmm. But I think for Garrett Whitlock, I think a lot of us were hoping he may be a closer in Boston. And there was also the talk of him making the rotation in Boston. Now he's Rich Hill's follower. And with 2 1/3 innings and 4 innings respectively in the 2 games he's appeared in, that he's perfect for this category. Not readily available. He is in Yahoo. And I think this is a move you can make in the shallower leagues as well. He's going to follow Rich Hill. Rich Hill's probably not going 5 innings. The Red Sox are going to score runs. They get the Minnesota Twins and the Tampa Bay Rays this week. Once again, I'm chasing wins here, which I'm not necessarily supposed to do, but I think there's a great opportunity for at least one in these couple of matchups where he's probably following Rich Hill this week.
Absolutely. This is some shades of Ryan Yarbrough with the following that Whitlock could be doing in Yahoo League. And again, like I said earlier, I don't play Yahoo anymore, but I'm surprised he's not more widely available. I remember the move in Yahoo typically is to have your Chad Greens or your Seawalds on your roster just because they can just trim those ratios down super well, and it can happen 2 to 3 times a week. So Whitlock is even better on that format, where it's essentially a K9 league because there's an innings cap. So this is a great name, because I'm shocked he's 38% owned on Yahoo. I love that call out.
Yeah, I think a lot of the Yahoo leagues are daily roster moves. And with this not happening till Monday, I think we'll probably see that percentage go up over the next couple of days.
Absolutely. I have another similar case with Alejandro Kirk. I really wish I would have added some Whitlock into my portfolio, but the uncertainty surrounding the role, for right or wrong, had me away from him. And I'm regretting that one now, because he looks absolutely.
Yeah, I expect if the Red Sox, it sounds like they are pretty dead set on this being his role, at least for a little while. So it won't surprise me to see him being dropped in some 12 and 15 team leagues over the next week or two as people need that spot. And then for the reasons that I like Garrett Whitlock, he should become available.
Absolutely. This is a fantastic name. If he's cut in any of my leagues, that's a guy that I think I could possibly go triple digits on.
Very nice. Now, if we are looking for saves, which is, like I said, this is why I think Garrett Whitlock may be dropped in some spots, that's not going to be his role right now. Of course, we have to speculate on closers at times, unless we spent a very large amount of draft capital addressing the subject and category. And even if we did, sometimes situations put us in this spot. I try not to skip around from my speculative closers. Even if something looks like a better situation than the guy I have rostered, I'm just afraid I'm going to drop a guy, pick up another guy, and the guy I dropped gets 2 saves that week. So I try not to switch them out too much. But if we're still looking, this is our 3rd fab period of the season, going into the 2nd full week of the season, if we're still looking to add saves, is there anywhere we can go?
Yeah, I have a handful of names for this, but I'm really glad, Kevin, that you laid it out that way, because I've heard yourself make this point, as well as the dead ball hitter Rob DiPietro. Oftentimes we have this spec closer that we want and it doesn't work out. And then maybe 1 or 2 weeks later, we just are like, it didn't work. Let's go to something else. When in reality, it might work, but it might be in May. It might be the 2nd week of May that it works. So that's a good point. I'm glad you brought that up, since our names are a little limited here in this segment, but I think it's because we're going to just trust what we got to an extent. Right. But a couple of guys that I think could be picked up on the relative cheap was a guy that many thought could be a closer heading into this year, but we're scared off by Mark Melancon, and it's Ian Kennedy. He's averaging almost 3 more miles an hour on his velocity than Mark Melancon. And Melancon could figure it out. He's had a career of getting saves, but if you wanted to throw a cheap bid, I think Ian Kennedy could be worthwhile, since Melancon could honestly just lose it and no one would be that surprised.
Yep. And I think some people expected that this would eventually happen when they signed Kennedy. And so people that spent very late draft picks or very small amount of auction dollars, I think maybe rewarded fairly soon. I like a Kansas City Royal. I like all of the Kansas City Royals.
That's true.
But I was a big advocate for Scott Barlow throughout the offseason. I have him rostered on multiple teams. I'm a fan of Josh Dalmont. I think he was, in spite of his little rough patch last season, overall, I think he was better than a lot of people realize. But Dylan Coleman has closer stuff in Kansas City. And if the Royals continue to lose ball games and trade Barlow, or Barlow is a high leverage guy, they don't like to always saving him for the ninth inning.
Yep.
I think Dylan Coleman is somebody to keep an eye on. He definitely has closer stuff, yet to give up a run, 4 appearances, striking out 1.5 guys per inning. He's somebody to definitely keep an eye on.
I couldn't agree more, and I'm glad that he has your seal of approval as a guy that I've picked in round 50 in a handful of DCs, hoping to see that. Since Kansas City, they can be pretty fluid at times, a little bit like the Rays. They can mix and match. They've got a big spot in the seventh. They'll bring Barlow in there, and we've even seen it this year too.
Yep, already seen it, exactly. Any wild cards that don't really fit one of our categories at this point in the season? We had more guys, it seems, at least in a few years anyway, prospect-wise, start the season with the big league club. We've already seen a couple of the others that didn't, like Mackenzie Gore, Josh Lowe, already get recalled, and injured guys. We've talked about it's early, so maybe we do have a spot where we can stash somebody. Anybody just as a wild card that you'd like to have rostered while they won't cost you anything, that you're hoping for some things from later?
Yeah, the most exciting name for our list, or one of the most exciting from this segment, is Pittsburgh Pirates prospect pitcher Ronzi Contreras. Now, he's got the Spencer Strider thing going, where he's coming in out of the bullpen. The arm isn't fully built up. He's a young kid, so they're not going to push it. But on a per-inning basis, later on down the road, once he gets a little bit more wear and tear on his arm to get him to be able to go deeper into the games, I think he could be an electric arm to start. The walks have been high, and that's a bit of a concern. But I know he was dropped in some leagues, and in fact, I dropped him myself. But to see the team bring him back up, that's a player that really caught my radar whenever he was called back up to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, definitely. He's the funny thing about Ronzi Contreras for me is last season he got a lot of attention.
Yeah.
And at the time, I was intrigued, but I wasn't interested at the price that all of the hype was forcing upon him. Now it seems like everybody's just forgotten about him.
Yeah, that's I do remember last year when he had a 3-level season. Anytime a pitcher can do 3 levels, that automatically opens up my eyes in a big way. And he was a big talk there at First Pitch Arizona, being in the AFL. Very few pitchers there are of interest, and he was one of the few. This just shows you, Kevin, obviously we can talk a million players, we won't, but in 2019, he was a 7K per 9 pitcher. And then he comes back and all of a sudden he's in the 12s and 14 K9 as a starter. That just shows you that these guys can reinvent themselves, and we don't know what they did over the winter. That's why a Lucas Giolito got a lot better, and that's why going for a Daniel Lynch could make some sense before everyone sees it. So that's just one of the benefits of baseball.
Yeah, Eno Saris says all the time, one little tweak to one of your pitches can completely transform what you're doing as a pitcher. And if we're fortunate enough to catch it early, we can really reap the rewards. I really like your James Caprella call out here.
Okay.
He was somebody that I was drafting for most of the offseason. And then I was adding him in the first FAB period, until it was right before that first FAB period where he hit the IL. But he's not supposed to miss a whole lot of time. We may see him back the end of this month, if not early May. And he's got multiple pitches that he can command well. And anytime somebody does that, I'm interested.
Absolutely. I'm glad that this one caught your eye, because I'm going to be honest, I was a little self-conscious whether this would be a good call out, just because he isn't very proven. Obviously, he was another high-end prospect, but missed a few years. And last year in 2021, he really caught my attention because he checked off a few boxes of over a strikeout per and around 3 walks per 9 with an extremely nice home ballpark. Now, the problem was is that the injury risk was making me shy away from him in DCs just because I need the volume there. But as one of your last pitchers in a fab league, if you can scoop him up maybe this week or next week before he gets the major league start, you can get him for a few shekels rather than once he comes up, then he's going to cost a little bit more if he has a good performance.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely want to keep an eye on that when we expect to see him re-enter the rotation. Because once he does, especially if it's a nice start, as we all know, then all of a sudden the prices go up pretty quickly. Anybody else that you're stashing?
Yeah, we hit on Josh Naylor, so that's another one. I don't want him necessarily in a 15-teamer yet with only 7 bench and no IL. But in a 20-teamer, sure, he can enter the conversation. He came back, like you said, quicker than we expected. But the last one that I want your take on, since I'm not fully sure what to think, but I know the talents and the bat and the opportunity could be there, is Alec Thomas from the Arizona Diamondbacks. Obviously, he's got some speed potential. He's got a smidge of power, and he has a nice plate approach, and he's a really nice top 50 prospect. There's openings there since it's a little bit of a tough, it's a kind of a bad team in Arizona. So I like Alec Thomas as a potential long shot, but I wanted to get your take on that, Kevin.
Yeah, he's somebody that I've definitely kept an eye on. I've had him rostered for 3 seasons now, I think, in a dynasty league. Definitely keeping my eye on him there. A lot of people think he's going to be a top 10 prospect by the end of this season. And then as the season drew closer, we started hearing, ooh, maybe we're going to see him with Arizona Diamondbacks in 2022. Thus far in the minors, it's starting off with a nice 286 average. No home runs or stolen bases yet, but he's 10 for 35 to start the year. It's not doing anything to diminish his chances of, it's just, even with the new CBA, even with all of the prospects we've seen already this season, we still don't know how teams are gonna play this out with service time manipulation. But Alec Thomas is definitely something I'm interested in, with the only question being, when will we see him at the major league level?
I think injuries could certainly dictate that, because even though he only had 8 home runs in 150-plus games last year, David Peralta, so far, looks a lot better, so that's a good thing. He's a huge leader there in Arizona. If you watch their games, he's just a heart and soul of the team. Pavin Smith could turn an ankle on accident and get hurt, or Seth Beer kind of a thing. So injury could potentially open this up. And just the last point, steals are just so tough with our speed streaming section. We had mentioned Santiago Espinal, and it's not, you know, exactly what you want for steals, but he could get one. So it just shows you how tough it is to find steals. And Alec Thomas does represent that potential opportunity if he got called up down the road.
Absolutely. And that's why they're stashes.
Yeah.
That's why it's a stash. Lucas, anything else that you want to throw out there? We've talked some players, some news and notes, anything we missed or that you'd like to add, whether it be a player or just general strategy for this time of season?
Yes, going back to my general strategy, not that everyone needs to follow what I do, but just throwing out what I personally do. I do it like you with my claims and fab. I have a long list of guys that I'd be perfectly good with, and I try not to fall in love with one unless I truly need them. Daniel Bard, I know it might make some puke, Rockies closer, but hey, saves are saves. I need them. And I went over $100 on him. But outside of that, I'm not going probably over $40 for most players, just because I'm going to try to have a long list of guys that I'm good with and be a little agnostic about the results, because realistically, I don't necessarily know that this one guy is going to be so great that I need to be aggressive for him. Rather, I'll be researched enough to have a long list of players that I'll be okay with and just take whoever falls in between the cracks has been one of my big strategies, Kevin.
Yep. Yeah, as I agree. I set aside a good portion of my fab budget for the season for if I want to make a big play. About 20% of my total budget is set aside, and the rest of it budgeted per week for the rest of the season. So I'm looking in a $1,000 fab league to spend $30 to $40 per week for the entire league, whether that be a $30 player and three $2 players or one $40 player. It kind of really doesn't matter to me, especially like you said. I really take advantage of the waterfall bids and the supplemental bids. And I actually had a friend, first fab period, had a couple of needs, and he's playing NFBC for the first time, one of our On the Wire listener leagues. And he was hitting me up about how to make the supplemental bids. I told him how to do it and make a lot of them. If you have somebody you need, you have to get that hole filled. And as would happen with a lot of new NFBC players, not enough supplemental bids, didn't end up with anybody. And then in the second week, he said, yeah, I had 12 backup bids instead of three. That's exactly what we're talking about.
Absolutely. Couldn't have said it better myself. I'm looking at least 10 to maybe 20 if I have to make a cut for an injury. Or like I had Trevor Rosenthal on a team. Let me tell you, that was pretty much dead weight there. You have to make sure you have at least 20 pickups so I'm not saddled with them again next week.
Yep. Yep. Like we said earlier, never know what you might need for the weekend in the NFBC type format where we can change them out again on Friday. And in our pitching that we can only change once a week. Yeah. If teams have an off day on Monday and we're getting our bids ready and we haven't heard all the news from Sunday yet, that's still two full days where things can happen that surprise us with our rosters.
Absolutely. This week, John Segura and Robbie Grossman, for example, they missed the weekend series. And you better believe the guys that weren't stashing prospects and had injury stashes on their team were able to add some more at-bats over the weekend. So couldn't agree more.
Yep. Love it. Love it. I think that's going to wrap us up, Lucas. This is episode 55 of On the Wire. You want to let everybody know where they can find you, what you have going on, what's coming up?
Absolutely. First off, thanks again for having me on, Kevin. Really appreciate you extending the invite. It means a lot. But you can find any of my written work or podcast work over on drroto.com. My podcast co-host Lou Landers and I, we do a waiver wire show similar to yours and Adam. It's a bit shorter. It's more of I call it like an express show where it's more 25 to 30 minutes. Sometimes it's good for people to get in and get out, but then you have deep leaguers that want to hear all the research and all of the matchup stuff that you guys do. So both are really good for that. And then I also do DFS work on Dr. Roto on Tuesdays and Saturdays. So you can read for DraftKings or FanDuel those articles. Some of them are free. I'm not sure when always that happens. Sometimes they just do it promo for free, and then other times you have to be a subscriber, but I'm breaking down those slates. And then I also do some articles from time to time over on Fantasy Sports Degens. I did player positional previews for each spot over there this winter. And as we get more statistics, the groundwork laid down, I'll have some more articles coming out in the future.
Awesome. Awesome. And I can't thank you enough for joining me. And we will definitely do this again when Adam is back as well. Get the three of us all on here at one time. Make sure to subscribe, share, and review the Lucas Fantasy Baseball Podcast, wherever you're listening to On the Wire Podcast. Please, a rating and review always helps. It helps us become easier to find for others looking for this type of content, and we really appreciate it. We'll be back every Sunday with a detailed fab breakdown for the entire 2022 season. And of course, keep a look out, for my companion article over at pitcherlist.com. It comes out every Sunday afternoon, so you got a few hours before everything is finalized for most of our leagues with our Sunday evening fab runs. We have new episodes every day across the Pitcher List Fantasy Baseball Podcast feed and the Pitcher List General Baseball Podcast feed. Wherever you listen to your podcasts, you can follow myself on Twitter at HastingKevin. Adam will be back next week. He is at 80 grade, all spelled out. Lucas, thank you for joining me once again. He is at LucasBeery33. And of course, follow the pod itself, On the Wire Pod. Thank you for listening. And with that, we bid you goodbye.